Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
This is Dana Workman from Haunted Highway on Sci-Fi, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com. Boom.
This is Bill Murphy of Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake Paranormal Files, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com.
Hey everybody, this is Rex Williams, the medic from Destination Truth, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia, on liveparanormal.com.
This is True TV's haunting evidence investigator, Patrick Burns.
And ghost huntress author, Marley Gibson.
And you're listening to Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli.
And Michael Perry.
And we're here. Hello, we're here at the Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli and weekly at liveparanormal.com.
This is Stefan Brigati from Pacific Coast Paranormal, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com. She rocks.
This is Christopher Sanders with My Ghost Story on Biography. You are listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com.
Hi, this is Professor Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com.
This is author Alexandra Holzer, and you're listening to Ghost Host Sophia Temporelli.
Hi, this is Jeff Belanger, host of 30 Odd Minutes, founder of GhostVillage.com, and author of lots of your favorite paranormal books, and you're listening to the Ghost Host Sophia on liveparanormal.com. Boo!
This is Nick Groff, executive producer of Ghost Adventures, the original documentary in Ghost Adventures, season 1 through 10, and executive producer of Ghost Stalkers, author of Chasing Spirits, the building of the Ghost Adventures crew, and founder of NickGroffTours.com. You are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. Tune in.
Hey, this is Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Jeff Belanger, writer and researcher for Ghost Adventures. I'm an author, the writer, host, and producer of New England Legends, the television series, and the podcast. And I just love all things spooky, and I love that Sophia Temporelli has made it 10 years, a decade of broadcasting on liveparanormal.com. Congratulations, that's an incredible accomplishment, and please stay spooky, Sophia.
That's right, it's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com, and congratulations, Sophia, on over 10 years, that's right, a decade of broadcasting here on liveparanormal.com and History FM. Thank you, Rob Sterick, for providing this format each and every week, and to all of our moderators. Thank you guys for patching us through at live events. We had no internet feed. Thank you for all your support over the years. Your call-ins are welcome. 347-202-0316. That's 347-202-0316. Feel free to jump into the liveparanormal.com chat room too as well. It only takes a second to get an avatar, and you're part of the LP family here when you do so. If you have any questions for our guests in the chat room, make sure that they're all caps too as well. so we can distinguish between the conversations going on in the chat room. Today, we welcome five-time Bram Stoker Award finalist and best-selling Ghost of the Quad Cities author Michael McCarty, now promoting his latest release, Eerie Quad Cities. Everyone on Twitter at MichaelMcCarty6. Also, too, the books are available, all of his titles as well, Barnes & Noble and BNN.com, as well as Amazon search, Eerie Quad Cities, and now available on Kindle, Nook, and paperback. Coming up, we have next week, next Saturday, the 18th, we have Chip Coffee and Adam Berry. They'll be on the show to once again promote a new season of Kindred Spirits. So be looking for that as well. So we'll be chatting with them. Also, to Ghostorian Mike Ricksacker promotes his title, Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. That'll be the first show coming in after the break and all the best of shows. So that'll be on January 15th of 2022. So you don't want to miss any of these upcoming broadcasts. We have other guests that are securing their spots, too, for the show. So like the ghost host Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com, Facebook fan page to learn of the guests as we learn of them real time. Also, like LiveParanormal.com Facebook group page. A lot of great new broadcasters have been added to the lineup here at LP. Membership packages on the homepage of Live Paranormal, they start as low as $2.99 a month. And Rob Sirk, the site founder, he's great at rewarding the audience. So a lot of autograph books by some of your favorite paranormal authors, a lot of giveaways and things of that type for the members here. Also support the vendors here on LiveParanormal.com that keep the lights going on the homepage. So if you're getting Grandma a mail meter for Christmas or anything like that, do it through the LiveParanormal.com vendor page. Tonight, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, we have Beyond the Screen and Ghost Light Radio, and as well, monthly Mondays right here, Chip Coffee of A&E's Paranormal State, Psychic Kids, and now on Kindred Spirits. He's monthly right here on this very network. And again, he'll be on next week, too, as well. Archive shows, if you miss anything, they're available on the homepage of LiveParanormal.com as free MP4 iTunes downloads. Let's bring on the host here, trying to unmute. There we go. Sophia, congratulations on 10 years here.
Thank you. I can't believe it's already been 10 years.
Yeah, you're doing a fantastic job, and you've helped a lot of people over the years, and today is no exception. It's going to be a great show. But you got the Twitters, you got all these other pages and things. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, at Sophia Temporelli with 1L, and Instagram, just at Sophia Temporelli.
All right, tell us about your guest.
Today, returning to the show, we welcome five-time Bram Stoker Award finalist and best-selling Ghosts of the Quad Cities author Michael McCarty, now promoting his latest release, Eerie Quad Cities. Everyone visit Twitter at MichaelMcCarty6, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon search Eerie Quad Cities, and now available on Kindle, Nook, and paperback. Let's welcome Michael into the show.
All right, still turning on mute. There we go, Michael. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, I am so glad to be back, Sophia, and Live Paranormal. It's been too long. It's been too long.
Wow.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, and congratulations on 10 years. That's amazing. That's really amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been an incredible 10 years. And congratulations, too, on being a five-time Bram Stoker Award finalist.
Let's hope it's six.
Yeah.
I have a, maybe this book might do something. I have another nonfiction book coming out next year, so you never know.
Absolutely. I mean, to start off, can you tell the audience a little bit about what kind of inspired you to become a writer?
Oh, I don't even remember. I've been doing it since I could pick up a pen. It's just kind of, something I was always doing, even as a little kid. My mom would buy these little tablets of, like a notebook tablet, which were blank pages, and I would draw a bunch of dinosaurs and write goofy stories. And I did that as really, really young, and it just kind of developed from there over the years. I would think my very first published article was in sixth grade. And so, it's been going back for quite a long time. Every time I think about I've been doing this for such a long time, I should just, I'm thinking about retiring eventually. I can't even think of not doing it. I'll take some some periods, because I've been, you know, a published book author almost 20 years now. And, you know, it's like when I'm just going to stop doing it for a few months. And I've done that in periods, you know. After 2 months of not doing it, it just drives me crazy. I have to go back to writing again. I'll do two more books, you know. Yeah, it's just something I've always been doing, and hopefully it will do for, you know, continue doing for a while.
Absolutely. I mean, you write some amazing books too. What was kind of your initial inspiration to go into the, you know, nonfiction ghost genre of book writing?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I when I was in college, there's a moment where you had to kind of, you know, declare your major. And mm-hmm. I was kind of really leaning pretty heavily, for journalism, because I, you know, been writing for newspapers, you know, school newspapers, and just doing a lot of nonfiction writing through, you know, grade school, junior high school, and college as well. So I was really leaning towards journalism a lot. So I was pretty sure that was going to be my major. And it wasn't until when I graduated from Scott Community College of my associates, mm-hmm. and I went to University of Iowa for a year, and my academic advisor, was encouraging me to become an English major. And I'm going, are you kidding? I didn't think I, mm-hmm. you know, had what it takes to be an English major. And he goes, you know, you're getting A's and B's at University of Iowa. I just kind of shrugged. He goes, this is one of the toughest schools in, you know, the English in the United States. So I said, oh, well, maybe I should become an English major. So when I went to my last school, and where I got my bachelor's was Marycrest College, they're, you know, declaring, you have to make that, you know, are you going to become an English major or journalism? So I did both. I did a double major. So that's kind of mm-hmm. been my crossroads. Should I do journalism, which is nonfiction, or should I do fiction? And I kind of been doing both for a very, very long time. I've always had a fascination with the paranormal for a long, long time. Back from even the 70s when I was a kid, seeing there was a lot of stuff about ESP and UFOs and ghosts and Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and, you know, the Abominable Snowman. And I love the Abominable Snowman so much that my current rabbit is named Yeti.
mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've always loved that, you know, paranormal, you know, stories and research and, you know, even from a kid and, so for a long time. So I don't think I really started taking the ghost stuff really seriously to the turn of this century, where I've been studying paranormal stuff pretty extensively from the 90s and until the turn of the century. And I said, you know, maybe I should kind of bump it up a notch. And I did my very first ghost book, which was Ghostly Tales of Route 66. And that book has still been selling, and it came out about 12 years ago. it's something I really like doing, because I just like doing, I like history, and I like a good ghost story. And I think, doing research in these ghost books is a combination of both. You get to do a lot mm-hmm. of, you know, research, and you get to get, you find some really, really good ghost stories along the way.
Absolutely. I mean, you've written some amazing books with so much, you know, knowledge in them and just facts. Can you tell us, too, how you got the amazing Creston to write the introduction for your book and how you initially came in contact with him?
I initially came in contact with Creston over 30 years ago. I used to work at the Funny Bone Comedy Club, and he was our first, mm-hmm. At that time, he was doing, you know, like the Tonight Show, I forget how many times, like over 300 times. And, so he was one of the first really big entertainment acts to come into the Funny Bone. I think it was like maybe the second week we were open. And his manager called me up when I was working at the Funny Bone about 30 years ago. And I was the promotion manager. And his manager called me up and said, the Amazing Kreskin wants to do a seance at a local haunted house. I go, cool. we want you to set this up. And I go, okay. So I started looking. I started doing some local research. And at the library, there was all these articles written by this local reporter called Jim Arpey. And I go, wow, he really has a lot of places. He's sort of like the, you know, the ghost expert in this area during the 1970s. So I called him up and I said, well, you did a lot of research about different, you know, ghost places in the Quad Cities. Where would you recommend to do like a, you know, a seance? And he said, well, you know, most of these places are private, so they probably don't want, you know, a lot of places advertise that they have ghosts. They're going, yeah, you're probably right. And he said, the place I would recommend would be the Pi Kappa Chi Palmer's fraternity place. And I'm going, I said, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. So I went with Palmer, and they said that we could do it. And so I had the Amazing Kreskins, you know, do the seance there. We had all the local TV and newspaper and radio personalities there. I mean, it was jam-packed. And I wasn't know what to sure to make of it, but I just remember I was like in the corner. That's how packed it was. I was like in the corner by the door, and I was like, my back was against the wall. I was just like jammed in there because they had, you know, the people from the fraternity, the newspapers, the radio, and everybody in there to do the seance. And during that whole seance, which was incredible, it just really blew me away, I kept on getting this creepy feeling that somebody was behind me, which was impossible because my back was against the wall. But I kept on turning my head, and it was like, I mean, it was really creepy. I go, you know, I was like, how can anybody be behind me because I'm against the wall? But it just kept on getting goosebumps in the back of my neck. I kept on feeling cold spots. It just really freaked me out. and I'm getting kind of goosebumps thinking about it. It's over 30 years. After the show, the Amazing Kreskin thanked me. He goes, wow, that was, you picked a really great spot. He goes, is there anything I could do for you? And I said, I'd like to do an interview with you. So that was my first interview with the Amazing Kreskin. Over the years, we would do a lot more. And early on, I came up with the idea of doing a book, just like if I sat down and did like a conversation with him, like we were just sitting in, by the fire and just talking about his life. And he really liked the idea, so I did a book called Conversations with Kreskin. And that was about 10 years ago. And so when I was getting ready to do my, this Ghost of the Quad Cities, I kept on thinking about Pi Kappa Chi and the Kreskin's, the seance and how that really kind of inspired me to do this book. And I called Kreskin up and I said, you know, you have to do this introduction. You know, you're so much the inspiration. To do that seance at that haunted house is the reason I'm doing this book right now, And he did the introduction. It was a great introduction. And so when I did the sequel, Eerie Quad Cities, I asked Kreskin again to do the introduction as well. So, yeah, we've known each other for over 3 decades now. He's definitely a presence in my life.
Well, that's amazing you have that relationship with him and, we're able to, kind of start writing these books because of, the experiences you shared with him during that initial seance. So, that's really incredible, too, to just have that history. Can you tell us a little bit about, both of the books, Ghosts of the Quad City and Eerie Quad Cities, and, what was your favorite, facts you learned while writing them?
Oh, yeah. I didn't really initially, have two books in mind. They just kind of happened. Mm-hmm. Basically, the Ghosts of the Quad Cities, happen because I gave a friend a private ghost tour, and they were so blown away with it, you know, just stuff I knew. And I go, really? They got that kind of reaction. I said, you know, I should just do a book about it. So I wrote to the publishers my idea of a book about true ghost stories in the Quad Cities, thinking that they would just kind of like, yeah, maybe. But I was quite wrong. 2 days later, the editor called me up and says, "Now, let's do this book." I wasn't quite expecting that, you know, thing turnaround. But I gave a really good proposal of all the ideas I had, and so, yeah, I would consider probably Ghosts of the Quad Cities as like maybe the best of, you know, ghost stories of the Quad Cities, the most famous ones. You know, you have the Black Angel of Riverside Cemetery, which is probably one of the most famous, statues that was at the John Deere Riverside Cemetery. And, I mean, this went on for a long, long time that, you know, the Black Angel, I mean, there was a lot of stories over the years that if you kissed the Black Angel at midnight, you'd die, you know, or, you know, but there was a story rumor of it, someone being chained to it overnight and dying, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff like that, you know, kind of local folklore about it for over the years, so that was definitely on my agenda to kind of look and do research over. The other one would be there's a what they call Quarters One at the Rock Island Arsenal. You know, they had the POWs at the Rock Island Arsenal. In Gone with the Wind, the character Ashley was stationed. I mean, he was a prisoner there. And so, I mean, that's how much history is ingrained at the Rock Island Arsenal, that a character from Gone with the Wind was a prisoner there. So there was a lot of local, hauntings and ghost stories over the years that people, you know, talked about. The other famous one besides those was probably be the ghost of Cary Grant at the Black Hawk Hotel. Because Cary Grant died. He didn't die at the Black Hawk Hotel, but he kind of died between the Black Hawk Hotel, where they took him to the Black Hawk Hotel, and before he got to the hospital. But yeah, his ghost has been reported different sightings at the Black Hawk Hotel. He's also one of them, probably the most famous one. I collected all these ghost stories and took a lot of pictures and had some friends take some pictures and put the book out. And I was really surprised at the general response to it. It just blew me away that everybody just wanted a copy of this book. I mean, it was, of all my books I've ever written, people were just like eager and, you know, just so eager to get this book. And it's like, it just gave me a lot of joy, you know, that people, even after they were eager to get it, they would read it and just write back or call or, you know, let me know how much they enjoyed it. So when I was kind of doing it, I had a lot of material that I couldn't get covered because I had a certain amount of words that I could only do for this book. I had a word count. I had picture counts. I had all this stuff. And so there was a lot of stuff that I wanted to do for Ghosts of the Quad Cities that I just couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So I kind of pitched the idea of a sequel to my publisher. I already had two stories pretty much, earmarked right away. The Chippinock Cemetery and Fairmount Cemetery, I just didn't want to put them in Ghosts of the Quad Cities because I already had three other cemeteries. I just didn't want this to become the cemetery book either, you know. So I already done a lot of research on those two cemeteries, so I already had that stuff kind of, written up as ideas and stuff like that. So they said, well, you know, we really like the book, but we don't really like to do kind of sequels per se in the same area. And they says, but we do have another, besides, you know, Ghosts, we have this other series called Eerie. And we have, I go, oh, really? And I says, can I see it? They sent me this book called Eerie Eerie, about Eerie and Anna. And I was just really, you know, kind of knocked out by how that book is presented, you know, because they had other stuff besides Ghosts. They had, you know, UFO sightings and Bigfoot and river monsters. And I go, you know, there's a lot of similarities to this area. And I've been, like I said, kind of fascinated with that stuff over the years anyway. So I plan to do the sequel, which just came out, called Iroquois Cities. And, you know, I just decided that one of the things that everybody liked about Ghost was how much, and you kind of touched upon it as well, Sophia, about the local history. Mm-hmm. And I like doing a lot of, you know, local history, but the person I leaned on the most for local history in Ghost was interviews with this local historian and a published author named John Branser, mm-hmm. Jr. And we just got along so well. I mean, it was so enjoyable interviewing him for Ghost of the Quad Cities. And we already planned to do, you know, some interviews for the second book. And I said, you know, I asked John if we could meet at Fairmount Cemetery, which is one of the places covered in the book, which is not too far away from the Grand View Terrace, which, I mean, it's like a block away, which is also was haunted. And I said to John, I says, you know, we plan to do these interviews. How would you feel instead about doing interviews? How would you like to co-write the book instead? And he was very, very ecstatic about the idea. And so he was able to dig a lot deeper into the local history because he's a local, I mean, he's a historian by nature, but he's a really a big local historian as well as somebody who really understands the paranormal and the paranormal history of this area. So the combination of, you know, the paranormal that I knew and the Quad City area and his background with the local history, we just kind of pounded out, and the book was just such a pleasure to work on with him. I really enjoyed it a lot.
I mean, that's great, you know, you had that experience and were able to, you know, write another book. I mean, you know, ghosts are such a big part of pop culture nowadays, but also just the fascination with, you know, the reality ghost shows like Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters. I mean, there's just so much that people want to know and explore more in their own cities or different cities that they've never been to. So, you know, it's really great that you were able to get more information out there about, you know, a lot of these maybe unheard stories from someone who's passed on but is potentially still around haunting a house or, you know, just confused in the afterlife.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I did my first ghost book, Ghostly Tales of Route 66 in 2008, you were talking about, mm-hmm. you know, all those shows. I think at that time there might have been only one or two of them. Now you're just like, there's 20. There's a lot more interest. I kind of, you know, kind of gauged people's reactions and everything. You know, back in 2008 when I was doing signings and that, I would say we probably have almost doubled people believing in you know, encounters of ghosts or just hauntings in general from 2008 to now. It's just, I think people have become more open-minded about it, whereas like, oh, you believe in ghosts before, it was like closing the door or something. No one, it was like black or white. But now I think it's the general populace of the United States is more gray. I think more of the people, you know, believe in it than not believe in it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just there's so much interest around it, and I think just really there's more open-mindedness to things that, you know, people don't understand. I mean, you kind of had that back in the Victorian days, but, you know, for a while there, people wouldn't really want to hear or believe what you said. And I think it's really great that, you know, there's more interest and less taboo with the paranormal field and just ghosts themselves.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I kind of like the fact that you brought up the Victorian because this is really an exciting time of the year for ghosts or ghost mm-hmm. stories because, I mean, it's been a tradition since the Victorian age to tell a ghost story around the fireplace during Christmas. I mean, it goes back a long, long way. And, in fact, that's what Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol is basically, you know, that exploring that tradition and kind of, you know, fictionalizing it, making it, you know, the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. And so, and we kind of talk about that as well. Then his, in Ghost of the Quad Cities, I talk about his son being buried here in Riverside. So it kind of all ties together. It's sometimes a small world.
Absolutely. And, I mean, I might be wrong. It's been a while since they talked about it in my high school English class, but I think Mary Shelley actually wrote Frankenstein during that this time of year, too, back in the Victorian days.
Definitely. Yeah. The idea of, just kind of gathering the family around the fireplace and, you know, scaring them as goes back quite a while. In fact, it's still kind of in our pop culture today. I think the song "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year" has a reference to that town ghost stories. Town ghost story. I can't remember the line, but there's a line about uptown ghost stories in that song as well, and it's a Christmas song.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, there is just so much overlapping nowadays, too. And with you as a writer and, you know, having an interest in the paranormal, what's your opinion on shows like Riverdale and Nancy Drew on CW taking these old classics and actually converting them into basically supernatural shows?
Oh, I love it because, you know, it just goes to show you that it's hard to keep a good monster down.
mm-hmm.
I was just seeing a movie the other day. I think it was last month. It was Halloween Kills with Michael Myers and stuff. And, you know, that series has been around for 40 years, yet there's still interest in it. And it's good to take the old stories and bring them back to a new generation because, you know, we've been kind of, seen them over the years, but there's people who, you know, haven't ever seen a Friday the 13th movie or, any of the other movies like that or TV series over the years. So it's good to kind of bring it back to a new audience because, you know, it keeps the flames of that alive, you know.
Absolutely. I know we have to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with more questions.
Yeah, it's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com. And today we welcome 5-time Bram Stoker Award finalist and best-selling Ghosts of the Quad Cities author Michael McCarty. And also, too, he's here promoting his latest release, Eerie Quad Cities. Everyone on Twitter, visit @MichaelMcCarty6. And also the book available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon by search, too, as well, Eerie Quad Cities, and now available on Kindle, Nook, and paperback. It's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dustin Perry, the paranormal rock star, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with the most, Sophia Temporelli, only on liveparanormal.com.
Hey, this is Rick Hayes, the psychic medium, life consultant, author, and lecturer, and you're listening to the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com. Believe.
Thank
thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
This is Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the ghost host, Sophia Temporilli, on liveparanormal.com.
Not only am I Dave Schrader, but I'm Dave Schrader of Travel Channel's The Holzer Files, and you're listening to Ghost Host Sophia Temporilli on liveparanormal.com. I feel left out. I wanted to throw myself into your mix of voiceovers now.
I love it. You know, it's almost like we didn't leave break.
Oh, poor Dave, having to crowbar himself in there. And we're at the late edition of the show, trying to unmute our guests, too, as well. Let's see. We got Sophia and Michael. You're back on.
Hello.
Hey, Michael. Thank you again so much for coming on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you guys.
Well, we enjoy having you on. With, you know, all the ghost books you've written, what has been the most unique or scariest experience you've had while investigating the paranormal?
You know, I think it's not necessarily any of the stories that I've done. It's just what kind of happened during the stories. The first story in the Iroquois City is called Abandoned and Haunted, about Grandview Terrace. And that place was, you know, like a nursing home, and it's been, it was abandoned for many years, and it was really such an elegant and beautiful, you know, stately mansion, kind of up on a hill. You can oversee the Mississippi River and everything, and then it just went out of business, and it was abandoned. And then over the years, it just was like a graffiti collectiveness. Yeah. People would break in and spray paint it. It really is kind of a travesty, you know. And then eventually, you know, they tore the place down. So right now there's nothing there. But the thing that probably scared me the most about that particular story is I interviewed somebody who went to the Grandview Terrace a few times, and they actually brought a ghost back with them. And that kind of is a thought that really kind of kept me up at night, you know. They actually ended up taking a blanket that belonged to one of the patients there, and they seen, you know, sightings of that spirit in their own home. So, yeah, that really kind of shook me to the core. Unfortunately, the thing about the book is you can only, you know, run a certain amount of pictures. You only could do a certain amount of pages. The person I interviewed for the book took all kinds of pictures of the place before it was tore down. So I did post it on my Facebook page called Ghosts of the Quad Cities. I also think it's called QC, Ghost. But they both go to the same thing. It goes to the Quad Cities Facebook page. And I ran all 60 pictures of the place. Yeah, that one really kind of shook me up a lot. The other one that kind of took my heartstrings mostly was we were kind of touched upon it earlier about the, you know, Pi Kappa Chi, the fraternity house, which has always kind of been a, you know, a favorite of mine. Well, shortly after Ghosts of the Quad Cities came out, maybe about 6 months later, they actually tore down Pi Kappa Chi. Not only the house, they tore down the whole block. It's just like there's nothing there. It's you know, I took a picture of that as well. That's in the book. But, yeah, it was – so I kind of told the – it kind of made me go back and kind of reevaluate the, you know, let's tell the whole history about Pi Kappa Chi and you know, So, yeah, that it's just kind of every time I drive by there, there's nothing there. You know, it's just there's nothingness there. And so when I was talking to Kruskin about doing this introduction, I kind of told him about all that. You know, I was like, they tore it down by Kappa Chi, and he kind of made some references to it too. So yeah, but personally, I think doing both books, I might have, you know, had that same kind of an experience where there was kind of a presence here. We kind of did some sage, and after that, it was, you know, burned some sage, and then it kind of went. But it was kind of hairy for a while. So I had some personal experience about it as well. I'm going to kind of go onward, and I am going to do a third book for the publisher, not necessarily about the Quad Cities, but more about maybe the area, maybe a larger area that we're planning on. But unfortunately, my next book with them is a non-ghost book. It's a spirit book, but the alcoholic spirit ones. I'm doing a book about the Quad City beer history, and then I'm going to do another ghost book. So it's they're pleased with me, and I plan to write for them, you know, for quite a while. But yeah, it's been a pleasure. Both books, you know, they've been so professional, and History Press, and they just they did such. I mean, the proof is between the covers. Both books are so beautiful. It's like when you pick it up or, you know, read it on Kindle, you're just looking at just everybody who's just, you know, takes like almost a craft approach, I mean, art approach to it, and just makes it look so beautiful.
Absolutely. And what is your writing process when you start writing a book? Do you know, what's just kind of your process with that, and how long does it normally take you?
Both these books took me about 2 years each. And the beer book is going to take another 2 years. So, the nonfiction, you just have to do a lot of different research on it. You know, it's just, you got to, you know, what they say, cross your T's and dot your I's. There's just so much research behind each story that, you know, and there's a term, I think it's that painter, what's his name, Bob Ross, I think, on PBS used to say something like, happy little accidents. There's a lot of that going on in the book. I mean, there's lots of stuff that I just kind of stumbled across that I didn't plan on doing. There's a section I have called Other Eerie Encounters in the Quad Cities and Beyond. And that kind of came about where I had a lot of people who wanted to tell a ghost story but didn't want to, you know, be identified. And so I didn't really want to put them in the main part of the book because, you know, everybody would, you know, identify themselves and kind of stand behind it. But, there's people who work in hospitals who, you know, have a reputation, and there's, some other people that didn't want to be identified, which I respect, and, you know, gave them, kept them anonymous like they wished. But like I said, I didn't want them in the main part of the book, so I did this other part of the book. And I did a little story in that book, what they call the death curve of Cambridge. And there's a story, I kind of really summed it up, which this lady kind of went berserk and killed her kids with an axe, caught the house on fire, and then she died. And it was just a little write-up in that section. And one of the funny things that, not funny funny, but one of the things that I put in the original article, and this article is only originally about two paragraphs long, is that her husband, you know, was so distraught that he hung himself. And John, being the local historian and researcher, said, Mike, that didn't happen. I go, what? No, I read it on the front page of the paper. Oh, yeah. Then the next day they retracted it. I go on, they retracted that he hung himself? He goes, how? But then, you know, this was the what they call the yellow journalism stage of writing back, you know, at the turn of the last century. So where there were more sensationalism to sell newspapers. But, yeah, that little article, you know, just kind of blossomed. We kept on, John and I both kept on finding a lot of stuff about it. And then it ended up being a whole chapter in the book. So it's one of those little happy little accidents that just was amazing. It's an incredible experience. And I also like to kind of give a heads up to Jason McGuin, who did a lot of illustrations for the book. His illustrations kind of gave the book a creepy overture as well. So it's like, I mean, I ran a lot of pictures that I would take, or I had a friend, Bruce Walters, take, or Julie, who was at the Grandview Terrace. But his illustrations between all that really just, you know, pushed the book to the top, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great that you had, you know, all that help, you know, just from other people with the book, too, and, you know, were able to collaborate like that, but also find out, you know, such an interesting story that they retracted, you know, that statement. That's definitely a big statement to take back.
Right. How can you, like, not see someone hang themselves, you know? It's like, whoops. You wouldn't get away with that in today's standard of journalism, or at least I hope.
Absolutely. And, you know, with, you know, so many books coming up too, what other places would you like to write about? If you could write about anywhere in the world, what town or city would you like to most know about and history and ghost-wise?
Oh, definitely Chicago. I mean, I lived there for a couple years, and it's kind of been the, you know, setting of a lot of my fictional work because I lived there a couple years. But I was able to get my first taste of it for at least, you know, the ghost stuff with Ghostly Tales of Route 66, because I included the story about Resurrection Mary, which is probably one of the, I would put on one of the top ghost stories, most famous ghost stories in probably the United States. But yeah, it's like, I just love Chicago. There's so much history, and you know, it's just you know, I could probably do three books about Chicago because there's just so much stuff over the years. You know, from, you know, the Chicago Fire to the gangsters during the 30s, 20s, and 30s, and just everything in between. It's it's my kind of town.
Absolutely. I mean, there is so much history there, and it's a really cool city, too. And what individual, like, location, like a place, like an asylum or something, would you most like to write about?
Oh, you mean, like, that I haven't written about? There's one in, I can't think of the name of it now. I'm drawing a blank. There's an abandoned asylum in Iowa that I've been kind of doing some research on. And, of course, the Villisca axe murder place is on my list to do some research on as well. It's probably up there with Resurrection Mary, as everybody kind of knows about that. You know, it also kind of parallels that story that I was talking about earlier about the Cambridge death curve of a family just overnight, you know, get massacred. It's kind of you know, sad, and I think the sadness kind of goes into the pores of the foundation of the building. That's why people are still visiting it today.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's really incredible stories like that, you know, like Jack the Ripper, where they're still unsolved, but there's just so much tragedy surrounding them.
Oh, yeah. Jack the Ripper is, I mean, it has never been solved even after all these years, and how grisly it was. I actually did a fictional short story about Jack the Ripper as well. It was about, called Denizens in the Dark. It was about these zombies during that period of London who were starving, living in the sewers of London, and they were looking for people to eat and stuff, but they didn't want to be discovered, so they would do these grisly kind of murders, and that's how the Jack the Ripper story got started in my short story, which was a ton of fun research to do as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you learn so much good information. I mean, bad information too, but it's just incredible, you know, all the stuff you're able to learn, you know, just through your writing and, you know, just all these unknown facts and, you know, little stories about people who may have been forgotten otherwise.
Yeah, you get, for every successful story, you get like a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
I had one of those for Erie Quad Cities, where there's a tale. I talked about the house on the hill at Augustana College, and I talked about that in the book. Well, there was a lot of stories over the years that the owner of that house was kind of visiting the house on the hill and going downtown to the public library. What it was supposed, because he had a portrait at both places, and he was upset that his portrait had been moved from the house. One of his portraits had been moved from the house on the hill down to the public library. I go, oh, that is such a great story. And I did like a month's worth of research. I talked to the library, I talked to the college, I talked to other, you know, local historians, and it just went to a dead end. I mean, even John, who's, like I said, kind of an expert on the local history, couldn't really dig up a lot on it. So it just kind of went to a dead end. The weird thing was, during the story, I was talking to the Rock Island Public Library at the time, and they have that portrait of the guy from the House on the Hill, and I was going to go in there and take a picture of it. Well, it disappeared. It got lost. Mm-hmm. They had it on the wall for many years, but they were doing some renovations, so they moved it to another location. So I was going in there to take the picture of that portrait, and it disappeared. And then it was missing for several months, then it popped up again. So it was one of those stories that never went anywhere, but it was still kind of creepy to cover.
Absolutely. And I know we're coming towards the end of the show, but are there any websites, upcoming interviews, events, investigations, or books that you'd like to mention?
Definitely, check out, Ghost of the Quad Cities on Facebook. Definitely check out Erie Quad Cities. My next book coming out next year is a sequel to, I had another book called Modern Mythmakers. And I'm doing a sequel to that coming out in 2023, where I interviewed famous science fiction and horror writers. But just keep on following me on Twitter and Facebook. And I try to answer all, emails. And, I try to keep myself available.
For sure. And I want to thank you so much, Michael, for coming on today. It's been great talking to you, as always, and you're always welcome back on in the future if you ever need to promote anything.
Oh, I'll definitely take up on that. But it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Sophia. I'm pretty sure by the time my next ghost book comes around, you'll be, still around, because I have a feeling you could be around for another 10 years.
Well, thank you so much,
Michael.
Thanks, Michael, and I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Michael. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, the
Ghost
Host Show is... Yeah, well, fantastic show today, Sophia.
Definitely. Michael was such a great guest. I'm going to thank you all for listening. The show definitely will not be possible without all of you, and I will talk to you guys again next week. Bye.
And again, for Michael McCarty... his Twitter, at MichaelMcCarty6, that's at MichaelMcCarty6. Barnes & Noble carries his title, as well as Amazon by search. You can search the field Erie Quad Cities, and now available on Kindle, Nook, and paperback. Also upcoming, we have next week, we have Chip and Adam, Chip Coffey and Adam Berry promoting the new season of Kindred Spirits. That's going to be the 18th, again, next Saturday. Also, Ghostorian Mike Ricksecker, he'll be on the program to promote his title, Alaska's Mysterious Triangle, on January 15th. We have a lot of best of shows coming up. but that's going to be the first one coming into the new year. The Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on liveparanormal.com. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Debbie at Xeon Ghost Adventures. You're listening to The Ghost Host with your host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com.
God bless you all.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.